You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Hearst Ranch. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable, native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, go to HearstRanch.com. Welcome to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host, Chef Smarty Pants. Hopefully you're listening to the show live tonight, but if you're not, remember you can always podcast any episode of Why We Cook or any Heritage Radio Network show on iTunes. I think I've been forgetting to mention that, so I wanted to get that out there. Anyway, so I have this weird thing going on this winter where I start to feel like I'm getting sick every week. I get a little sore throat, I get kind of tired, I get run down feeling, and then it goes away, and then it comes back, and it's kind of been happening for a few weeks now, and everybody around me is sick. My sister had the flu and a sinus infection at the same time a couple weeks ago. People I work with are sick. Poor Jack in the control tower here has been sick on his birthday, no less. And last week when I left here, after I did my show, I was supposed to go to my swim class that I take on Tuesday nights. And I hate missing the swim class. I hate missing it. But I was feeling really lousy. I thought I was getting sick. I was like, I don't want to go in the pool. I went home. And then the next day I was fine. I wasn't sick. And then yesterday, same thing. I started to feel really lousy. My throat was hurting. I canceled a very lucrative private gig in Connecticut this morning. And then I was fine. So I don't really know what's going on here. If anybody has a clue as to what this is about, let me know. So it's like I'm not sick. I'm just sort of like feeling on the brink of getting sick. I'm like on the precipice. So I'm definitely going to swimming tonight, because I need to get back into the water. I think swimming in the winter actually prevents you from getting colds and flu. I think it kind of like flushes out your sinuses and keeps everything in there like nice and moist, because we spend so much time in dry air. I think it really helps. Although it's probably best to swim in salt water in the winter, so it's, you know, kind of your natural salinity balance in there. It's like brining yourself. But I don't have access to any salt water that's not near freezing at the moment. So I'll deal with chlorine. It's okay. It's like you're, you know, sort of immersing yourself in the primordial fluid again or something. Immersing yourself internally and externally. Like being poached, maybe. Anyway. So speaking of all these liquids, that's my segue there. I'm talking about swimming. Now I'm going to talk about edible liquids. So speaking of all these liquids, a couple weeks ago I did a show on chicken stock and chicken soup, and how to make them both from leftover chicken carcasses. You remember that? I had roasted a chicken, then I made stock, then I made soup. I talked about it. And that was good. And then, so last night, you know, after I had my initial, oh my God, I'm getting sick again, freak out, I said, oh, I need another brothy soup. I need more broth. Not a thick soup, but a brothy soup. But not chicken soup. Like, enough with the chicken soup. I'm tired of it. It's like I'm tired of tea, and I love tea, but I'm ready for this whole season to be done. And no more tea, no more chicken soup. What I really wanted was something more like a bowl of, like, ocean water. Not quite as salty. Like an ocean in a bowl kind of thing. I wanted salty and spicy. As if, like, I were taking a dip in a hot ocean that had chilies and garlic floating in it. Not like a hot duck pond with carrots floating in it, you know, which is what chicken soup kind of is. So, luckily, totally by coincidence, after I taught my class at work yesterday, there happened to be a bag of little manila clams left in the fridge, that nobody used. And I knew that if I didn't take them home, somebody else would. So I rescued those little manila clams from perhaps falling into the wrong hands. The nefarious wrong hands. So manila clams are these little tiny brown clams. They're prob- probably about an inch long. They're not the tiniest clams out there. They're pretty small. They originally came from Asia, you know, hence the name Manila. They came to the U.S. by accident in the 1930s when oyster spat were being imported from Japan to begin to try to repopulate oyster beds that had been killed by pollution. Oyster spat are little tiny baby oysters, like oyster eggs, but they're not eggs. And luckily, the Manila clam turned out to be a good invasive species, like not a destructive one. Like a lot of invasive species came that way, sort of on the backs of other things and wreaked havoc. But these guys haven't wreaked any sort of environmental disaster. They've actually been pretty good. They've helped the environment. And so they're farmed, basically. All the Manila clams we eat are farmed. And they're farmed extensively, but on the West Coast only. And they're farmed and they're gathered with rakes, not dredges. Dredges are when, you know, ships go out with these gigantic forks and basically scrape up the ocean bottom and pick up everything they can get. But these are actually farmed by hand with rakes, so they're a lot less destructive. And they filter water like all bivalves do. So they helped clean up the water. So, you know, all around, they're a good thing. So I had never really done any research about Manila clams. I just like to eat them. And so I looked online today, my favorite seafood site, you know, seafoodwatch.org, Monterey Bay site. And they call them a best choice. So good job by me for taking home the good stuff. Now, you know, I wouldn't intentionally go out and buy West Coast clams that had been flown in if there were local East Coast clams there free for the taking in my fridge. But remember, I'm thrifty. We've talked about this before. I'm very thrifty. So isn't it better that I eat the free clams that would have gotten thrown away, perhaps, and so their lives were not lived in vain? Isn't it a waste? Isn't wasting those clams sort of a worse offense than the carbon perhaps produced by flying them here? I don't know. I'm just trying to rationalize this. But they were free, so I took them, and I took them home. Now, clams are bivalves, like I mentioned. So they, you know, have two shells that open up attached by a little connective tissue. And they live under the mud, under the sand, really. And you know how they breathe? They have a little siphon. Do you ever see like that little neck that sticks out of a steamer? That's how they breathe. Anyway, because they live under the sand, they feed by filtering in water. And in the water is plankton and algae and microorganisms. And that's how they get food, by filtering that in. And then they filter the food out of it, and then they spit that water back out. But because of that, they often get a lot of sand and grit inside of them. And if you grew up eating steamers like I did, like I grew up on Long Island, and we would eat a lot of steamers, which are softshell clams, and inevitably you would get one that was full of sand, and it like ruined the whole experience because you'd bite down and get those teeth full of sand. Sometimes it happened with mussels too. But mussels nowadays are all aquaculture mussels, and they're very clean, so you don't usually have the problem. But you still sometimes have it with clams. So what you have to do with those clams when you take them home, which is what I did last night, is purge them. Purge them. Now, of course, in my mind, this immediately brings up a vision of clams kneeling in front of the toilet, sticking their finger down their throat like a bunch of junior high school bulimic girls. But that's not what we're talking about here. The clams are not purging themselves. We have to purge the clams. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, how to induce bulimia in a Manila clam.
Falling, 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 falling. might as well fall in. I don't know about my love.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Hirst Ranch. I'm trying to listen to the words of that song. Jack said it was a sad bulimia song. I couldn't really hear it. Where was I? Oh, yeah. So, welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef's Marty Pants radio show. So, we're talking about clams. I'm Erica Wides, your host, by the way, in case you forgot who I was. So, I brought home these little manila clams from work, and I was saying that you have to purge them because sometimes clams have grit and sand in them. So I may have talked about this on the show before, but it's always good to have refresher lessons about things in case you forgot. Now, the way that we do this, that we clean them out, is you basically trick them. You pull a fast one on them and you make them think that they're back in the ocean. They haven't been caught. So what do? You make a mini ocean. You put them in a bowl and you fill the bowl up with very cold, very salty water. It's got to be really salty so they think it's the ocean. If you put them in plain water, fresh water, they will die because they don't live in fresh water and they'll start filtering it in and will promptly be killed by that. So it has to be salty and they have to think it's the ocean. Now, you could just then leave them in there in that salty water for a couple of hours, and eventually they'll just filter, and they'll lose their sand, and everything will be fine. But what we want to do is kind of speed up the process. I didn't want to wait a couple of hours. And so what I do is feed them. So you're basically feeding them their last meal. It's like a little trade-off. You know, you caught them. You're making them give up their lives. So the least you can do is feed them before you execute. So what you want to do is give them something that they can filter in. So usually you use flour or sometimes you use cornmeal. Now last night I used flour because I didn't have any cornmeal. But when I'm teaching, I tell people that they should generally use cornmeal because if you're doing this in a restaurant situation and somebody who has celiac sprue or just a gluten allergy can't eat flour, if they eat the mussels or the clams that you purged with flour, they're going to get sick. That happened to a coworker of mine. She's one of our pastry instructors. And over the years, she's developed celiac disease. And so she was in a restaurant that had mussels on the menu. And she thought, oh, well, that's good. I'll be safe. There's no gluten in that. And she wound up getting sick because they had purged the mussels with the flour. So I say use cornmeal just to be safe. There are people who are allergic to corn, but please, you know, let's not get carried away here. Anyway, so you put a little handful of flour or cornmeal in the water. You swish it around. Let them sit for a while. Maybe like an hour is good. I did it for 20 minutes because I'm impatient. And what happens is the clams or the mussels, they go, ooh, we're in the ocean. Oh, the tide's come in. It's full of fresh plankton for us to eat or algae. And they start eating. They filter in the water and they start eating the flour. And then they digest it. And then what happens after you digest? You excrete. So then they poop it out. And in the process of pooping out the flour, they're also pooping out any sand that was in their system. So you're cleaning them out. And while you're cleaning them out, you're fattening them up at the same time. So it's very convenient. It's this sort of one-stop shopping process. But what occurred to me today is it's actually like a little teeny tiny feedlot operation. Feedlots are where they fatten up beef cattle before slaughter with grain and corn and soybeans and all kinds of horrible stuff that puts on a ton of fat onto them after they've grazed for a while. And feedlots are bad. And I was like, oh my God, I'm guilty of shellfish feedlot operations. But what are you going to do? I mean, you know, I felt sort of bad about it, but you know, those little bivalves, they would have never normally eaten flour or cornmeal if they were out in their natural habitat. You know, that's what I always say about like farmed salmon, is it's farmed and it's fed things like corn and soybeans. I've never seen a salmon like jumping through an Iowa cornfield in search of food. Sort of the same idea. And here I am on the show always screaming about feedlot animals and how bad corn-fed meat is. And then I'm running like a little tiny, you know, CAFO, a little feedlot operation right there in my kitchen sink. But I don't want to eat sand. So Too bad. And I didn't get to the top of the food chain by eating sand. I got to the top of the food chain like all other humans because I figured out that you could catch those clams and feed them other food and make them not sandy. So when the clams figure out how to capture us and fatten us up on what we eat and then eat us, we'll be even. Anyway, after the feeding, which I did, like I said, for about 20 minutes, I rinsed them off really well. This is also really important because they live under the sand. They live in muck. And their shells are really groovy, like in grooved, not groovy, not like, you know, wearing bell bottoms, but grooved. And the grooves on the shell hold a lot of grit. And so if you're cooking them in their shell, in liquid, all that grit and sand can get into your soup or your broth, and that's a problem. So you want to rinse them and kind of give them a little scrub with cold water. Now, it seems obvious that you'd use cold water, right? I'm sure all of you say, well, of course I would use cold water. Well, one time I was teaching a class, a recreational class, and we had these clams, and there was this nice couple in the class, and I said, okay, why don't you two take the clams over to the sink and wash them before we cook them? And they said, okay. And then a few minutes later, I went over to the sink, and they had the clams immersed in a bowl of hot water that they had added soap to. They were basically dishwashing the clams with hot water and soap. And so I said, oh, maybe I wasn't so clear about that. You should do that in cold water with no soap. So I just want to make sure everybody knows what I'm talking about. So anyway, get them in some cold water, scrub them off, get the dirt out of the grooves, and then you're ready to go. So anyway, that's what I did. Then I took a pot and I added some oil and I sweated out like 8 cloves of garlic sliced up, sliced it really thin. I thought if I'm getting sick, I need to like stop it in its tracks, do the garlic cure. So 8 cloves of garlic went in there, a shallot sliced up, and a Thai bird's eye chili, a red Thai bird's eye chili that I sliced up really, really thin. And I thought the garlic and the chili together could like scare that cold virus right out of me. Then I added a big pile of cabbage, finely shredded cabbage, because you know cabbage, very high in vitamin C, higher than citrus. Well, I don't know if that's true that it's higher, but it's high in vitamin C. Plus I have this cabbage in my fridge that I bought at least a month ago, and I can't get through it. It's like the loaves and fishes of cabbage. Every time I cut a chunk off of it, it grows back. It's the eternal cabbage. It's the eternal flame of cabbages. So the cabbage went in, and then I wanted to use like sake or white wine or something, but all I had was Heineken. So I threw in a half a Heineken in there and a quarter chicken stock. Now you're saying, but it's clam soup. Why are you putting chicken stock in? It's okay. Chicken stock is so neutral. You can use it. But you could also use water in here, fish stock, clam juice. You ever see those bottles of clam juice? You could use that too. Then I threw in like a splash of mirin because I wanted something a little sweet in there. And I put the clams in, covered the pot, brought it to a boil, and boom, they opened. They only take, these guys are so small, they only take a couple minutes. They're not like little necks, cherry stones. Those clams take like 8 to 10 minutes. These clams were open in like 3 minutes. As soon as they're open, you're done because they're very delicate. And the minute they're open, you don't want to keep cooking because they'll toughen up. So clams opened up. In went a big handful of sliced scallions. I crumbled some nori over the top. And then I topped all that with Vietnamese fried shallots, which I buy in jars in Asian markets. And they're really good. They're sort of like the, you know, those like jerky French fried onions that you put on that disgusting green bean casserole that people eat. They're like that, but shallots and way better and fried in palm oil, and they taste really good. So some of those went on top, and then that was it. So basically it was like clam pho, which doesn't really exist. Having spent as much time in Vietnam as I have, I can say there's no clam pho, but it tasted like it. It was really good. It was like hot, spicy, chili, garlic, salty, basically like an ocean in a bowl, but not quite as salty. And it was really good. And I'm not sick anymore, so maybe it cured me. I'm not sure. But I'm feeling pretty good tonight. I'm going to swimming right after this. So we're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll stay in the ocean a little longer.
Look, I found her. Damn. Red coat. Look, I found her. Look, I found her. Red coat. Look, I found her. Look, I found her. Damn. Red coat. Look, I found her. Look, I found her. Red coat. Look, I found her. Look, I found her. Damn. Red coat. Look, I found her. Damn. Look, I found her. Damn.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Hearst Ranch. Welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. I'm Erica Wides, your host, Chef Smarty Pants. Last week I mentioned that the weekend of Valentine's Day, I'll be in Ohio at the Chef's Garden doing a benefit dinner for Veggie U, which is their elementary school Earth to Table educational program. I'm doing a benefit dinner there with Beej Flamholtz, my catering buddy who I've mentioned here a bunch of times before. But apparently Beej got a little pissed off because I didn't mention him last week. So Beej, there you go. Beej Flamholtz, Flamholz. If you're in Baltimore, you need a caterer, call Beej Flamholtz. So anyway, the two of us will be there doing the dinner. And it should be pretty great. We're doing a seasonal Earth to Table dinner, which means lots of root vegetables because it's February, but we'll make them really good. Don't worry. So anyway, we're not talking about the Midwest and root vegetables though tonight. We're talking about the ocean. So I was telling you about this clam soup I made from Manila clams, and it was quite the success. It was really good. I think maybe it cured me of my imminent illness. We'll see. It was good. And so since we're talking about the ocean, we're on the subject of the seas, you've heard me talk here, rant a lot about tuna lately. And, you know, the massive amount of overfishing that's going on and the near collapse of certain species of tuna, bluefin and yellowfin, and the mercury levels found in all tuna species. And I'm sure, as aware food people that you are, you've read about this. It's everywhere. You can't avoid it anymore. Luckily, it's out there. You know, any educated eater by now should know not to eat most species of tuna. There are a few that are still plentiful, but all have mercury in them. Well, the other day I was watching TV and I almost fell off the couch because there are these new ads that are running called Tuna the Wonderfish. Have you seen these? So these are these very like peppy, colorful, exciting ads that are sponsored by the Tuna Council. Now the Tuna Council is a species-specific council within the National Fisheries Institute, which represents the major U.S. canned tuna processors, namely Bumblebee, Chicken of the Sea, and Starkist, the three big. The National Fisheries Institute is a trade association committed to assisting its members to succeed in the global seafood marketplace. That's what it says on their website. So they're a trade association. Basically, they're there to help commercial fishing businesses sell more fish. Okay, so that's all right. You know, fine. Every industry has its industry groups. They all have their marketing groups. The Tuna Council is this tuna-specific arm of the National Fisheries Institute, which is a trade association, even though it has a name that sounds more like an academic research institute. And on these ads, they're promoting eating more tuna, specifically canned and pouched tuna. Tuna the Wonderfish. It'll make you sporty and active and healthy. They have all these bungee jumpers and astronauts, and there were some really flashy ads. Now, canned and pouched tunas are generally albacore and skipjack tuna, which they claim are the most robust and sustainable tuna species and are vigorously managed to avoid overfishing. And yeah, those species of tuna are still plentiful and pretty well managed. So the campaign shows this kind of, you know, really kind of pretty, sexy young woman. She looks like she's maybe 30. Obviously of childbearing age, which is important. She's wearing a short skirt and high heels, and she has this kind of funny little voice, and she's very perky, and she's in this really cool looking kitchen, and she's surrounded by like all these hot athletic young guys, and she's extolling the value and healthfulness of tuna and offering recipes and a cookbook and the website, and you know, your active, exciting lifestyle is complete with tuna at every meal. Because apparently people are eating less tuna now, which in my opinion is really good. But, and of course, the people who are trying to sell you tuna want you to eat more tuna. So these are some pretty seductive ads. I mean, I like advertising sort of, you know, from an artistic point of view. I mean, I think some advertising is amazing and brilliant. And these are pretty seductive. They're really bright colors. They're clever. They're witty. I mean, they're really flashy and pretty cool. But of course, there's no mention of overfishing or mercury anywhere. So I went to the Wonderfish website. And I looked through the entire website, and nowhere on there do they mention the word mercury once, anywhere. The tuna fantasy website, which is what it is offering potential, I think, was potentially harmful advice by using this woman who is obviously of childbearing age and, you know, sexy, the sort of underlying message there. They don't mention the FDA advisory about mercury consumption. The FDA has, I mean, the FDA, who are, you know, so in bed with industry that it's ridiculous, but they're even saying women and children should limit their consumption of mercury-laden fish, including albacore tuna. So anyway, the campaign urges women to eat at least 2 servings of fish each week, because the government says you should eat 2 servings of fish each week, but then they recommend that pregnant and breastfeeding women eat 2 to 3 seafood meals a week, including albacore tuna. So they're promoting pregnant and breastfeeding women eating more tuna than, like, even the government says they should eat. I mean, the government just says eat more fish, and they're interpreting it as eat more tuna when numerous studies have said it's full of mercury. So I find these ads a little bit distressing. The Consumers Union, Monterey Bay Aquarium, Seafood Watch, and Good Housekeeping have all done studies and said most canned tuna has too much mercury in it. So I'm just wondering, you know, if people are seeing these ads and they're being seduced and they're saying, oh, wow, these are some really hot ads, and look at that girl, and, oh, you know, it's like this healthy lifestyle. I'm going to start eating tuna. I don't know. Anyway, I was really disturbed by them, partly because I like the ads so much, and so I sort of hate myself for liking the ads so much, but I was also amazed that they were ads not for a particular brand, but just for a fish in general. I mean, have you ever seen, you know, a commercial that was just like, chicken, you should eat more chicken? It's sort of like those Got Milk ads. Those were also created by an industry group. So it's just some interesting stuff going on out there. The consumption of tuna has declined because I think people have become more aware, and now the industry is fighting back. So it'll be interesting to see where this is going to go. Just putting it out there for you. But anyway, we're just about out of time. So I just want to remind you again that if you are a fan of Why We Cook, if you like this show, visit us on Facebook. Just go to Facebook, search for Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. And become a fan, become a friend, send me comments. I'd like to know if people are listening to the show and whether they like it. If there's anything you want to hear me talk about, if you want me to shut up about tuna, just let me know. Also, on the Heritage Radio Network website, you can always leave comments on any show. And I look every week for comments. And actually, a couple weeks ago, when I complained that nobody was commenting, someone commented. So thank you to that person. You know who you are. I always look, and I appreciate the comments. And I think all the other hosts do too. So, you know, keep it coming. We want to know if what we're doing works for you and what we can do to make this a better radio experience. So that's it. I'm off to the pool. I'm going in. And we'll see you next week.